All right, thank you, Kim. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch on this Tuesday afternoon. Thanks very much for tuning in. Bob and Marianne will be back next week. I'm sitting in for them for the first hour of their show, the Business Lunch part, all through the week today. Coming up a little bit later, as I told Bill and Wendy, we're going to talk to a guy who's actually studying fidgeting. And I've learned in getting ready for this that fidget is one of those words that if you say too many times, it completely loses everything. So I'll try to keep it to a minimum. But fidgeting coming up a little bit later on the program. Also, we'll talk about women's issues as we do every Tuesday. Suzanne Muchin is here, the entrepreneur expert and the co-host of The Big Payoff on WGN Plus. April Fool's Day is tomorrow, and the Business Lunch's wet blanket will be along. That's not nice, but Philip Weiss from the managing director of Seyfarth Shaw at Work will be here. It's a law firm that helps businesses, and he'll talk about the dangers of having too much fun on April Fool's Day. So instead, we'll do it on March 31st. They're not having very much fun in Indiana these days. Mike Pence, the governor there, held a news conference earlier today, about that much talked about religious freedom bill. And he says that he will ask for a fix. He's defending the bill, said it was a good idea, says it was done with good intention. But he says the reporting on it, the characterizations that it has received, implied that people, gays and lesbians, I don't know that he used that phrase, but people could be discriminated against under cover of that law. And he's asked the legislature to give him a fix within a week on that.
But as I said, we've got a perception problem here because some people have a different view. And we intend to correct that. After much reflection and in consultation with leadership of the General Assembly, I've come to the conclusion that it would be helpful to move legislation this week that makes it clear that this law does not give businesses a right to deny services to anyone. Let me say that again. I think it would be helpful, and I'd like to see on my desk before the end of this week legislation that is added to the Religious Freedom Restoration Act in Indiana that makes it clear that this law does not give businesses a right to deny services to anyone. We want to make it clear that Indiana is open for business.
Indiana open for business. That is Mike Pence, the governor of Indiana, talking a little bit earlier today about that religious freedom bill and the problems that it has caused for the state pretty quickly. And it looked as if perhaps business wasn't open for Indiana. We'll kick that around. John Najarian is here, Dr. J, to talk about what's going on Wall Street today. Dr. J, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Great to be with you, Stephen. Thank you.
Let's start with Indiana. I mean, does that play on Wall Street at all? Or I would imagine there's probably not too much impact there.
Well, at least for the time being, no, there isn't. But if you heard some big corporations talking about potentially moving headquarters and things, well, that could be something that would play, obviously, to the negative. And I'm sure no one wants to see that happen. But clearly people are going to vote as they frequently do with their wallets, and that could hurt Indiana, and I think that's what Governor Pence was trying to address this morning when he took that somewhat painful press conference, Stephen.
It was painful. I mean, I tried to watch and listen to as much of it as I could, and, you know, I don't know if you saw much of it. Maybe I'm a little bit naive, but I still think the guy thinks he went into it with good intentions. I mean, and you know, they just got caught by this sort of hiccup in the language. They should have included it, and they didn't. I don't know. We'll see. But he says he's going to get it fixed. In Switzerland, they're talking about Iran and the nuclear agreement, and it looks as if this big deadline, which is just 4 hours and 45 minutes away, is going to be fudged a little bit. They're going to agree to continue talking. How does all of that work with the business world?
Well, that'll have an impact and has had an impact for the last several weeks, perhaps even months, of this first quarter of 2015, because Iran, if indeed they lifted those sanctions, if they come to some agreement on these nuclear talks, that could put more supply on the market. People anticipating that could happen have been leaning on, or in other words, pressuring downward the price of crude oil, both in Brent terms, which is, of course, what they use in Europe, and West Texas Intermediate here. because there's really three big drivers, Stephen, for that. Supply itself, whether it's oversupply in the United States, which we do know we have too much supply right now. Most of it's being put into storage right now. We have the pressure coming from the strong dollar and weak euro, and then we have this potential agreement with Iran. If they ultimately ended up walking away without a deal, I think you could see somewhere in the neighborhood of $5 to $10 rally out of Brent crude oil over the next several months. But I don't think that you'll see nearly that big a pop here in the U.S. because of how quickly additional production can be brought on from fracking.
So if they do have word of an agreement, oil prices will continue to go down?
I do believe so, yes, sir. Because right now this is just in anticipation of exactly that happenstance. If that does not play out, then I think you could see prices rise again, not as severely here as they could rise overseas. But I think the likelihood is some sort of deal will be struck, and much of that is priced in, but perhaps a little more downward pressure and one more test to the lower 40s per barrel for WTI could be in the offing.
All right, so it looks like April is the new May, or at least I've been reading about that. You know, the idea that sell your stocks in May and sit the summer out, get back into it in the fall. I don't know, A, what you think of that, but B, I was reading today, they're saying, well, everyone's going to do that in May, so to get the jump on it, you really should do it April 1st, do it starting tomorrow. What do you think of that?
Yeah, that's kind of like the Oklahoma Sooners when they got the name by surging across into that new territory that was about to become that state to claim the land, and they went over before they were supposed to. Same thing's been happening for years, of course, with the January effect for stocks. When people can first commit their capital as far as 401ks and retirement plans, you can't put that money into the market until the first day of the next year. However, people anticipating that lift started buying in the last week of December, and then in the mid-December, and then pushing it all the way perhaps even into the first week of December.
So that's where we get our Santa Claus rally?
Exactly. So I don't think you're wrong, Stephen, that sell in May and go away could play out. But I think with rates so low around the world and the pressure going to continue around the world on interest rates, I don't know that you'll see the market go down very far. On the other hand, you could miss out if we do start seeing a justification for some of the companies that have been hit pretty hard during the first quarter. And maybe some of those earnings estimates have been revised down a little too far. That if that plays out, then I think stocks like SanDisk, even Apple, are too cheap at these levels and would rise. And people that are in those stocks probably don't want to miss out on any pop that could occur from some of the new products that are coming on the markets.
All right. Gives us something to watch, John. It was good to talk to you again.
Likewise, Stephen. Thank you.
A Market View with John Najarian, sponsored by Nadex.com. It is 12:23 on the Wintrust Business Lunch, and Philip Weiss is here. He's the managing director of Seyfarth Shaw at Work, and producer Ann Johnson has played this music because she says it's wet blanket music. Sorry about that, Philip.
That's why I'm here.
Now, Philip was here with me on my Saturday business lunch program a few weeks ago, talking about the NCAA brackets and how, you know, it just, and you know, I know it's serious, so I'm not making fun of you, but it's kind of, I'm tickled a little bit about the dangers and the risks of filling out the brackets at work, right? I mean, yeah. It was a problem. So here we are now on March 31st, the day before April Fool's Day. And you have some,
I have similar advice.
Yeah, you do. And I'm not laughing at you, but I just giggle a little bit. But the idea is, I mean, businesses can't get in trouble on April 1st.
Yeah, there's no question. There certainly is a corollary, a connection to March Madness.
Right.
Something intended to be fun. In this case, harmless pranks, or many would agree, hilarious pranks. When the dust settles, or in some cases, the lawsuit settles, looks quite different.
All right, give me an example. Give me an idea of what can go wrong.
Well, you got the obvious, Steve. You've got the dangerous pranks, people running around with staple guns chasing each other.
Right.
We've seen those cases.
Uh-huh. Have you really?
We have seen those. Well, we've seen the results of those cases.
Right.
The demeaning stuff, insulting, discriminatory pranks, those I think would strike anybody as offensive, if not worse.
Right. I can see the danger of sort of the humiliation, really, if you frighten someone or, you know, mislead someone in the workplace. That can be tough.
Absolutely. And we've seen $1 million-plus settlements for those kinds of pranks in the workplace. But what's really surprising to many business owners and managers are the hidden risks. When it comes to a manager or an owner pretending, giving people false news in the workplace, it could be good news or bad news, and then revealing the truth. We actually had a client that came to us anonymously described
right.
here. And the
I'll get it out of you.
Eventually. And what was interesting was it was April 1st, end of the first quarter. The sales team had a huge first quarter.
And he fired them all.
Well, we've seen those. Fake terminations, huge liability.
Right.
So that's actually not a bad point that you raised.
Thank you.
In this case, it was quite the opposite. The owner comes in, he declares a victorious first quarter to his entire sales team. He then tells them that as a reward, he's taking them all to Rome.
Oh, the other way.
Yes. At the end of the day, the brochure showed up on everybody's desk depicting images of Rome, Illinois, population 1,700.
Right. Well, it would have been bigger with the trip.
It would have been.
Yeah.
And he was shocked at how angry people were. He was equally shocked, Steve, that people threatened to sue. But when he came to our office to find out what's the next step, we showed him there are cases in this very area where we promise something, whether it's April 1st or January 1st, and don't come through.
Okay, Philip, but I would be very dismayed over lawsuits in that case, right? I mean, you can be angry, you can be, you know, resentful and all of that, but there's got to be a point where you were the butt of a joke. I get it. I'm not going to sue you.
Right. And part of that is how much the employees could really rely on what the manager or owner said. But there's no question, if you make a promise to your employees and they rely on it, in this case, they ordered luggage online.
Wow.
They called their relatives in Europe. They planned the trip. He gave them 8 hours to start planning their vacation before he revealed the truth.
Yeah, that was a badly played practical
That's
joke.
True. And by the way, the same is true in the opposite. You tell someone that their deal is unraveled and they're on vacation and they start suffering heart palpitations
because
they have to come back to work. Same negative results either way.
We've only got a minute, but I want you to tell me the story about the LA firefighter who ate dog food.
Yeah, that's a $1,400,000 case, as it turned
it's
out.
It's not funny, Philip.
Because I wasn't laughing.
No, it was me. Right. I know.
Yeah, well, then we should talk.
I know.
As my legal hat on.
Am I getting myself in trouble here?
No, you're not. I mean, what's really interesting about these cases, that firefighter was fed dog food, allegedly by coworkers, and the result was that a huge and very notorious case. What's interesting, though, is managers can take some simple steps.
Okay.
They can be ready to sort of check out the workplace. Take a look at the traditions. Make those traditions positive and safer. And also be ready. If someone comes forward and describes what happened to them, don't laugh. No matter how funny the prank seems, respond like a manager.
Well, that's the hard thing. See, because, and we did this with the NCAA, you know, so they're behaving less as people, as sort of automatons, right? And it's your advice that they have to do that. From my standpoint, I'm thinking, well, then we sort of become this less human entity.
Yeah. I mean, there's no question. Fun in the workplace has its place. However, when the fun reaches a point where it escalates, and by the way, Steve, the code of all pranksters is to escalate the next time around.
Sure.
So at
right.
a minimum, look ahead. Look down the road.
Wait till you see what I've got for you next time you're in here, Philip.
Maybe I'll look through the door before I walk in.
I appreciate, you know, you bring up some serious topics, and you know I'm having fun with you a little too. So Philip Weiss is the managing director of Seyfarth Shaw at Work, and I can't wait to see what he says about Christmas if I'm still doing the show.
Me too.
We'll take a break. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. All right, thank you, Kim. Kim will be along a little bit later to give us an update on the business numbers. We'll check in with Orion Samuelson, too, in about 10 minutes or so to get the latest business headlines. So are you fidgeting right now? Are you a fidgeter? Maybe you have a squishy ball in your hand or one of those voodoo dolls when you squeeze it and the eyeballs pop out, things like that. There's a guy actually at NYU who is studying fidgeting. And his findings is that it actually is probably a good thing, a positive force in the workplace. So we'll talk fidgeting coming up a little bit later. But before we do that, something much more serious, or fairly more serious, I should say. Suzanne Muchin is here, the host of The Big Payoff on WGN Plus, also the principal at Mind and Matter Studio. Suzanne, welcome to the Business Lunch again.
Hey, Steve.
Did I just call you Susan there? I'm sorry about that if I did.
Common mistake. Suzanne is the right name.
Well, how about this name? Ellen Pao. Is that the correct pronunciation?
It is.
And so she's
making a lot of news.
She is. And she has been really, I mean, this has been a 3-year legal fight that finally came to its conclusion earlier this spring. She was suing Kleiner Perkins, the venture capitalist, for gender discrimination. And she lost. So tell me about that.
So it's an interesting moment for women in tech and women in business because she did, as you just said, she lost the case. So she was suing for gender discrimination. And the crazy thing about this case was, I'm not even sure she believed or her lawyers believed in their heart of hearts that they could win, because there was a lot of soft discrimination, the kinds of things that go on in the business world that a lot of people just sort of turn their backs at. But it all came to the forefront. And the great thing is, even though she lost the case, everywhere I go in the circles I run, and this is causing a lot of conversation.
Well, you know, right, you use the phrase soft discrimination. I've also seen it called casual sexism. How does that manifest itself? What is that?
So it's interesting. There was a great article that was just in the paper this morning talking about what happens in cocktail parties, for example, where I might go to a cocktail party with my husband. We're both working professionals. And a man will come up to both of us, and to my husband, he'll say, "How's work? How are things going at the law firm?" They'll have a brief conversation, and then he'll turn to me and say, "I know your dog was sick recently. How's the dog doing?" Right? It happens all the time.
All right, let me ask you this. The woman who wrote that, is that Ezra Klein's husband or wife?
I don't think so.
Because Ezra retweeted it yesterday, the Washington Post reporter, and said he could verify everything that was in the lead as if they were married. I don't know. But I read that too.
I don't know.
I read that as well.
Yeah.
And go ahead.
It's really something that so many women can relate to because it happens in settings. And again, does this lead to somebody being able to make a credible case as to whether or not gender discrimination really did keep them back from being promoted? That's hard to prove. But if this case does its job, it will get conversations going in many more circles, including, Steve, in our homes. I mean, this has to be, if you use that cocktail conversation as just one example, fixing that, getting that right, is the husband's job just as much as the wife.
You know, I totally agree with that. And I was reading also that they think that there are fewer women in tech startups because there are fewer women in venture capital. So if there are more women in charge of, you know, and as a guy who doesn't think he's prejudiced, that's kind of hard for me to understand. I mean, I think if I'm in charge of millions and millions of dollars and a person comes to me with a good idea, whether she is a woman or he is a man, if it's going to work, I'm going to give him the money. I mean, so where do you come down on that?
You'd think that would be the case, but I do think that this issue of the subtle discrimination really does rear its head. So, for example, if you're an investor and you see an opportunity for a potential investment, but it's in the beauty business or the fashion business or the makeup business, which might be a space that you're not necessarily familiar with or comfortable with or have a great expertise, you may not want to fund it. And yet that business is very likely to be run by a woman. So part of this is getting women not just in the door at the coder level or in the positions where we tend to think women in tech might have an entry-level opportunity, but getting more women in our boardrooms, getting more women to be making the investments and making the decisions.
Okay, so that's the fix, because I'm looking for the culprit in this. And I mean, it seems to me that if I'm not comfortable with makeup and I go a different way and I'm just sort of stupid that way, that's not necessarily an actionable offense, right? Or a conscious
exactly.
offense on my part.
Right. And a lot of this was culture issues. And that's where I think actually the change can be much more rapid, Steve, is it might take a long time for us to make progress in some of the bigger areas of impact. But if we're just talking about improving the way we talk to each other, that can start today.
Product Hunt came out with a list of the 39 hottest businesses founded by women. One of them was The Skim, which is a Chicago business, right?
It's great, and I love talking about this story right after we just talked about Ellen Pao, because here's an example. Danielle Weisberg, Carly Zakin, they started The Skim together 2 years ago, and it's a news site that does primarily target women. 70% of their readership are women, but they have 500,000 subscribers. And it's a news skimming site, just like the name would imply. I get it into my inbox every morning, and it has quick hit, really well-written summaries of the news of the day, and they are really hot. Michelle Obama, Katie Couric, lots of people are referring to it, Oprah promoting it, because it's a fantastic way to get your news. It's not light. It's not, 101. It's more sophisticated than that. And again, two women, they're 27, 29 years old now and really running a very, very successful company.
Suzanne, I checked it out this morning getting ready to talk to you. It's very cool. I love that site, The Skim, it is called. People should check it out. But, there's some irony here, isn't there, that we started this segment by talking about this casual sexism, and maybe it's just gender sort of relationships or whatever, and we're ending it with you talking about a new site that women are writing for women. So,
exactly.
We begin by talking about the fact that everyone should be together and treated equally, and we're ending sort of in a case where it's working, but they're not doing that.
Right. And they are writing. It isn't a site that is only of women, by women, for women. It's just women-centric. It has a female flair to it. But this is why I love this kind of a company, because it's not flat out saying we're only speaking to one gender. It really is for everyone. But they're really kicking butt right now. They're just, getting very, very successful and getting more users every day.
Well, they should, because I looked at it today and it's a great site. And I'm 3/4 woman, so I'll definitely keep looking at it. Suzanne, it was nice to talk to you again. Suzanne Muchin, the host of The Big Payoff on WGNplus.com and the principal at Mind and Matter Studio. We'll talk again soon.
Great to talk to you, Steve.
You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN. The Wintrust Business Lunch continues here on 720 WGN. Steve Bertrand in for Bob and Mary Ann today. And Dean Richards will come along to continue the show for the last couple of hours of the Bob and Mary Ann show, because Dean and I can't handle it on our own. It's a tandem. We just can't be in the same room together at the same time. So are you a fidgeter? I don't think of myself as a fidgeter. I think of myself as sort of a nervous wreck sometimes, but I don't know if it's fidgeting. Maybe fidgeting is a good thing. Researchers have been looking now at that and how we fidget. They're interested in why we fidget. And one of those researchers is Mike Karleski. He's a PhD student at NYU, and he joins us now. Mike, welcome to WGN Radio.
Hey, it's great to be with you.
All right, so how does a guy get involved in this?
Well, a guy gets interested in a topic called human-computer interaction, finds his way to NYU Polytechnic School of Engineering, and starts paying attention to how people use computers, and watches a student in a class playing with her keyboard and starts asking a lot of questions.
Right, and so as I read, she was playing with her keyboard just with the cursor, right? So the arrow key,
yeah,
she'd move
exactly.
It up and down.
Yeah, and she was just sitting there in a class bouncing the left and right arrow keys, and the cursor was dancing across the screen, and I thought to myself, well, goodness, I've done that. Why in the world do I do that? And certainly, the computer can keep up, but nobody ever designed it or thought about it being used in that way, and just started asking questions. Well, is the keyboard receiving something that this young lady it needs to do, and what is that need, and is the design of our digital stuff affecting how we use our hands and how we exercise our energy while we're thinking and trying to find creativity and focusing and those sorts of things.
Okay, so that design is going to be at the end of our talk. At the beginning, we're going to talk more about what people fidget with, I guess, and why they do it. Because, I tend to think of someone first of all, you think of stress relief. But other than that, if they're flipping their pencil or drumming their fingers or whatever, it's someone who can't stay focused. And the research that you've done and others have done sort of says that it has to do with focus, but maybe finding those outlets is actually a good thing when it comes to focus. Explain that for me.
Sure. There's a number of theories around this. Probably the most compelling one has to do with just maintaining a base level, that the technical term would be arousal, just how excited you are, up or down. And we see this in extreme forms with ADHD kids, actually, what is typically regarded as distracting behavior, or those kids not paying attention because it shows up in extreme forms, wandering around or playing with things in a really extreme way. In fact, seems to be part of a self-regulation mechanism. That's actually them investing bodily energy in stimulating the nervous system towards maintaining focus. And to a lesser degree, along that spectrum, the sorts of behaviors that we undertake while we are stuck in a thought or in the middle of trying to get our attention where we really want it. Sometimes there's this mind-body connection that shows up. We reach for something. We play with something. It stimulates the sensory system. It allows us to move our hands and exercise our body and nervous system together.
So while many of us might think we're looking at someone who's distracted, in essentially they're even more focused, or they're acting in a way to focus themselves.
Correct. And this also can bleed over into the topic of creativity and, as you mentioned, stress relief.
Tell me about the creativity.
Well, the creativity thing is, these are all very difficult topics to study since humans are, of course, quite complicated. But there has been a tremendous amount of research which suggests quite strongly that if we're in just a slightly better mood, we tend to be measurably more creative. And so these activities that we express in what I call the marginal space around our devices, it can be, in fact, a mood lifter. It could be something that makes you just slightly more happy or triggers a memory or what have you. And that can then have a cascade effect towards upping your creativity just a moment.
I know you sort of collected different mood lifters. You asked people to tell you what they fidgeted with. What's the funniest thing you heard about?
The funniest thing I heard about, probably the most surprising things we heard about was people started submitting amongst all sorts of interesting toys, baby toys and stones hardware from hardware stores. Several people actually submitted things like their lips and their earlobes and their beard and their hair, which was pretty unexpected. And it was interesting to hear them talk about why they did that and what they felt like when they were doing it.
Never someone else's earlobe, right? Because that could be trouble.
That might lead to a different kind of arousal, yes.
Let's get to the computer then. So if all of this works for us, and we're sitting at our computers all of the time, we need to stay focused, we need to stay energized, it only follows that maybe someone like you will come up with a design for a computer that will come sort of with a fidget widget. Tell me about that.
Yes, that's ultimately where we're trying to go with the concept of a design space that has to do with how we interact with our computers. Certainly, there's a definite trend. Things are smooth, flat, glass, aluminum, hard edges, very sleek, quite a bit different than the sorts of materials and behaviors and toys that we see people playing with, where they talk about how squishy they are, or pokey, or clicky, or what have you. So there is perhaps, and I would say that this is true, a missed opportunity to re-examine the context and the materials and how in the world we actually go about designing our digital devices, since they probably are swaying us away from very natural tendencies, drawing us towards these always-on input-output metaphors and just simply typing on a keyboard rather than using the full dexterity of our hands.
So our next HP might come with a squishy ball attached.
Maybe. Wouldn't that be amazing?
Mike Karleski from NYU studying all of this, the fidget widget. Listen, it was great for you to take time today. I appreciate it very much.
Oh, you're very welcome.
You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.